Good morning, noon, and night, and thanks for joining us on Gila Members Community Radio. Next up will be Civil Discourse, conversations and discussions on significant issues facing our community and our society. Your host is Jamie Newton, a professor of psychology with a specialty in social psychology, now retired from San Francisco State University. He resides in Membrus, New Mexico. And now, please engage with us in Civil Discourse.
Welcome to Civil Discourse, a public affairs program of Gila Membres Community Radio. I'm your host, Jamie Newton. This program was recorded on Saturday, October 12, 2013. Our topic is how to provide comprehensive, affordable health care for all New Mexicans, and more specifically, the Health Security Plan for New Mexicans campaign that my guest, Dr. Mary Feldblum, directs. We'll find out what that plan is and why its advocates believe a plan of this kind offers the only realistic approach to comprehensive, affordable health care for all New Mexicans. We'll ask why opponents of this kind of health coverage are so determined to block the Health Security Act that would make this plan the law in New Mexico. I'll also ask Mary Feldblum to help our listeners understand recent developments in the October 1 launch of state health insurance exchanges under the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, which coincided with the shutdown of the United States government by congressional Republicans, and to explain how the Health Security Plan for New Mexicans is intended to relate to Obamacare. I'll begin by introducing my guest. Dr. Mary Feldblum is Executive Director of the Health Security for New Mexicans campaign. That's a broad coalition of over 145 organizations that support the Health Security Act, legislation that would enable New Mexico to set up its own comprehensive health plan. She holds a PhD in sociology with a minor in economics. A former director of Hofstra University's Institute of Applied Social Science, she has worked as a consultant in a variety of areas, including social policy research, negotiations training, and mediation. Mary Feldblum has over two decades of experience working on a variety of health-related issues of concern to New Mexicans, including patient protection, hospital and health plan sales and conversions, and different approaches to providing health care insurance coverage. Welcome to Civil Discourse, Mary Feldblum.
Well, thank you very much, Jamie. It's a pleasure to be here.
The Health Security Plan for New Mexico, can you tell us concisely what that is? What are its principal features? And just give us enough history so that listeners can understand how this plan originated, what its objectives are, and why it's needed.
Well, the Health Security Plan has been around for 20 years, worked on by a variety of New Mexicans all around the state. And the idea is very simple. Let's set up our own health plan in New Mexico. Let's have no more networks. Let's have freedom of choice of doctor and hospital, including across state lines. Let's have a good comprehensive set of benefits the way the state employees and teachers have. That includes good mental health care. It includes acupuncture, chiropractic treatment, biofeedback, of course, hospitalization. It's a really good package. And let's have premiums that instead of going to insurance companies now go to our plan so it can earn interest. And even at 1%, billions of dollars will earn substantial amounts of money to help infrastructure, build infrastructure needs that rural communities like in Grant County need, that can't afford, the county can't afford it in terms of health care. It also would be run sort of like a co-op. Imagine citizens. We, the citizens of New Mexico, are running our own plan. So there are 15 commissioners, we call them, 10 representing consumer and business interests, 5 representing health facility and provider interests. No cabinet secretaries, no elected officials sit on this, not even the dog catcher. So it's a citizens board. And what is very important, I think, for Grant County is that it's geographically representative, so that this commission is not going to be Albuquerque and Santa Fe dominated. In fact, of the 15 commissioners, 9 come from outside Albuquerque and Santa Fe. So it has a very strong rural flavor to it, which is very intentional in terms of the conception of this plan. It would be paid for by using existing dollars that already go to healthcare, like in Medicaid, and it would be combined with premiums based on income with a cap to it, so the premiums don't go up and up and up, and a minimum below which some people just couldn't afford 50 cents a day or a dollar a day in a premium. And in addition, since everybody here drives cars, your auto insurance and for businesses, their workers' comp and commercial auto insurance premiums would be reduced. They have large health components. And if the plan, this plan that covers us in New Mexico, covers that broken leg, then you don't have to file the claim with your auto insurance company, where the employer doesn't have to file that particular, the health portion of workers' comp is paid for. It is a go slow approach, is what we say, because this is such a different paradigm, because it shifts the role of private insurance. We're self-insuring, most of the people in this state, so that you could purchase extra if you wanted to. There is a role for private insurance in the supplemental market, or an employer could offer more. But our go slow approach is, because this is such a major paradigm shift, let's do this slowly and carefully. So the first year, everybody said that we talked to says, oh, this sounds fabulous. How much is it going to cost? So that's what the first year focuses on. It focuses on the cost of this plan, assuming the services offered by the state employee package, and that about 1.67 million people would be part of it. And then what's it actually going to cost us personally? What are our premiums going to look like? And if that is not workable, if the premium schedule doesn't meet the cost estimates, or we're all screaming and shouting about the premiums that they don't look good, then there is a sunset clause in the Health Security Act. But there is a lot of evidence, and we'll get into this later, as to why this is an extraordinarily affordable approach, and an approach that everyone will have comprehensive coverage in New Mexico, and costs will finally be under control.
Thank you. The campaign that you direct to promote this plan, tell us about the organization, who backs it, individuals, groups, a little bit about the staffing, and what your own role in the campaign is as director.
Well, our campaign is a coalition, and this coalition actually is not a paper coalition. We seek active input from campaign member organizations. And over the years, we have grown substantially. We started off with maybe 20 organizations in the early 90s and have grown to over 145. And what I'm so proud of is that we're statewide. It's not just Albuquerque organizations or Santa Fe organizations, but variety of community organizations. We have health professionals, the pharmacists, for instance, the nurses. We have physicians for the Health Security Act. We have farmer and ranching organizations. We have labor organizations. It is a very, very broad group. We have locally here is the Green Chamber of Commerce. We have the Hispano Chamber of Las Cruces, the Hispano Chamber of Roswell. We have a lot of small businesses that have independently decided they really support this, which has just been wonderful. So Businesses for the Health Security Act. And so that's the broad range of organizations that are involved in this, and we seek their input constantly. One of the first things in organizing you can't do is take your allies for granted. And there have been a lot of changes over the years that we want to make sure that our supporters feel comfortable with, and there have been a lot of changes recently nationally that we all know of that we've had to deal with. And we have a very small staff, just a couple of part-time organizers and a part-time, very part-time communications person. We rely on donations from New Mexicans. There are a few foundations that have given us some smaller grants, but primarily we're able to operate because of New Mexicans and volunteers. We have volunteers around the state, and here in Silver City, there's a core of very dedicated volunteers without whom we would never have grown and developed in the way that we have. So we're a very homegrown organization. And my role has been essentially to be the janitor, the file keeper, do all the things that are necessary to keep the accounts of the campaign, but also to do research, because there's been a lot of healthcare changes, keep on top of it to help develop materials that we find so that people can learn about us and to, of course, appear on radio shows like yours and to educate people about this alternative that we think is people have a right to know exists.
Toward the end of our program, I'll also ask you how people can become involved as volunteers at the local level, because those who think this is a good policy initiative may also want to know how they can contribute to making it happen. You also have backers among counties and municipalities, and I saw on your list that Grant County has endorsed this health security plan for New Mexicans, and so have towns with names that will be familiar to all of our listeners: Bayard, Deming, Hatch, Las Cruces, and Silver City. What's the role of the counties and municipalities that support the campaign?
Well, about 4 years ago, we got a small grant from an organization to, because we thought it's really important that local governments learn about this approach, and maybe we can actually get resolutions in support, not of universal health care, not of some general thing, but of actually the Health Security Act. And thanks to local supporters, for instance, in Grant County, people began to present to the county commission and to the city council and about this alternative and counted their votes and were able to get resolutions in support specifically of the Health Security Act. And, you know, here Dr. Neil Apple was very critical. Gail Simmons, who's very active in the Green Chamber, and many others without whom this could not happen. And this happened in various areas of the state. So we do have 33 cities and counties that have actually passed resolutions in support of the Health Security Act, the most recent being Roswell, New Mexico.
When we return from our break, we'll find out more about the Health Security Act, which is the legislation that would make this plan law in New Mexico if enacted.
You're listening to Gila Members Community Radio, giving Grant County a voice and a choice 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. GMCR provides music, arts, culture, news, and public affairs programs in English and Spanish. Thanks for tuning in.
Welcome back to Civil Discourse, a public affairs production of Gila Members Community Radio. I'm Jamie Newton. If you're just joining us, my guest is Mary Feldblum, Executive Director of the Health Security Plan for New Mexicans campaign. We're talking about how to provide comprehensive, affordable health care for all New Mexicans, the October 1 launch of health insurance exchanges as part of the Federal Affordable Care Act and related issues. And if you missed the first part of this interview, it is available for a podcast download at your convenience. Mary Feldblum, we were just talking about the Health Security Act. Can you tell us how the Health Security Act reflects, would implement the Health Security for New Mexicans plan and where it stands in the legislative process now? What comes next? What's likely to happen?
Well, for those of your listeners who've just tuned in, imagine New Mexico setting up its own health plan, with complete freedom of choice of doctor and hospitals, great benefit package, premiums based on your income, sliding scale, and in addition, you get lower workers' comp and lower auto insurance. And it's run by a co-op type structure, citizens board, that's geographically representative. That's been the concepts that we've been talking about over many years with New Mexicans and how specifically would we structure this. What would be your worries if you were a doctor or a hospital? How can we address them? And we have listened very carefully. So the Health Security Act, which was first introduced in 1993 under a different name called New Mexicare, has really gone through numerous iterations. Even the last version that was introduced this past session had some amendments in it that had to reflect the realities of the Affordable Care Act, which we'll get into, but also some Deming doctors had some ideas that we wanted to definitely incorporate in the act so that rural New Mexico's interests would be reflected in actually in a stronger way. The act would set up the actual plan. That's what it does. We have to have a bill passed by the legislature, signed by the governor, that would enable New Mexico to set up its own health plan. And of course, we have to then figure out a way where the act spells out what happens when. What, for instance, there is a nominating committee that has to be set up for the commissioners. We did not feel that they should be elected. Most people don't even know who their state board of education commissioners are. That was not a wise choice, but we wanted quality people, and we felt that a good nominating committee was the way to go. That would give the governor some choices, and the governor would have to pick from those choices. We tried to depoliticize as much as you can that process. We also set up a system so that you don't have to trust me about what it's going to cost you. So let's let the legislature hire the think tanks needed, and through a public process, we will learn what the financing process will look like. And if it doesn't look good, then nothing proceeds. The nominating committee won't be set up. The commission won't be set up. First, let's see the numbers. And we think that's a very important process when you're changing the paradigm so much as we are. The insurance industry can play a supplemental role, and that's spelled out in the Health Security Act, so that an employer or an individual who would like to purchase more than what's offered under the plan can do so. And if you think about Medicare, Medicare is a self-insurance plan for seniors, but you can buy extra. You can buy a supplement, and that market is a very lucrative market for the insurance industry. So those are things that are spelled out in the plan, a kind of timeline, a structure for the plan. And what we didn't want to do was micromanage. You don't want to set up such details in the plan that you have to continually come back to the legislature and go through a process. But yet, we wanted to make sure that there was enough information for people to say, I know what this is going to be about. So, for instance, there's sections for doctors and hospitals, you know, how they would be paid, how that would work. We have a negotiating system, but mediation kicks in. I don't even know of any European country that sets that up, so that if the plan and the physicians groups can't agree, then there's some outside independent resource that we can go to. There's details about the services, type of services offered for the plan, and the numbers crunching has to be based on the state employee package of services, not their copays and their deductibles, but the actual services that state employees and teachers receive. So all this is very critical for people to know, what are we buying? What would we be costing out in that first year? So that is extraordinarily important. The legislation has been introduced various times in the legislature. It will next be introduced in 2015. We have a system in New Mexico of a one-month legislative session, a 30-day, which focuses on the budget, and that's in even years. And in odd years, it's our two-month session, which deals with more substantive topics. So we're targeting 2015. And which is certainly very, it will be very good in terms of a provision in the Affordable Care Act that I'll talk about, which is a waiver provision, which would allow a state to actually do the health security type plan.
I think I'm hearing that although you might have been very happy if what you had in place as a plan in 1995 had been put into law, since then you've been collecting input at all levels in the state. And so the Health Security Act now is probably a richer and better thought out plan than you would have had you been successful long ago.
Absolutely. While there was a structure that was certainly open to change in the early versions, we were in 1993. Seems like such a long time ago, but everybody was talking about national health care reform. There was the Clinton plan, Bush plan, and in fact, 22 states had introduced plans similar to health security. And we were fortunate in having two legislators, Representative Max Call and Representative Lucky Varela, who were the chair and vice chair of House Appropriations. And Governor King was he was the governor at the time. And we had cabinet secretaries look at the legislation and these two very sophisticated legislators. And it really meant that what we were introducing in New Mexico was something very, very solid. But as we went around the state and showed people some of the bills, they kept having new ideas and thoughts. For instance, I was in Taos, and there was somebody at the Taos News who said, "Will I be covered under this plan? It sounds great." And I said, "Well, of course you will be," because a resident. I assumed this person was a resident of New Mexico. Turns out she lived in Colorado. And so then it's sort of like the light bulbs went off. Oh my gosh, there are people who work in who live in El Paso and come and work in New Mexico. How do we deal with them? And so those are the kinds of questions, sometimes from an innocent somebody, you know, just off the streets that says, "Ooh, what about this?" Or somebody from a group of physicians who are very sophisticated and say, "You know, this language makes me nervous. You know, I think that we, you know, it would be better if you said it this way or addressed our concerns this way." And so as a result, we have something that is so homegrown, homespun, smothered in green and red chili, except you have real choice. You have real choice involved in this plan. And in fact, we got a call from a state legislator in Arizona who had called us, who wanted to introduce a bill like that in the Arizona legislature. His name was Phil Lopez. And he had said that he called the Legislative Council Service of New Mexico because he'd heard from a variety of organizations around the country that New Mexico had a very interesting piece of legislation. And he read it, and he was very excited about it and wanted to adapt it to Arizona circumstances. He didn't think it would have much of a chance, but he just felt it was an important piece of legislation. And I was just blown away because I had no idea that people outside New Mexico. We're not a well-funded organization. We don't go to a lot of, you know, conferences around the state. We're not in the New York Times or the Washington Post. And so the word has been spreading slowly that our plan is really very solid. We have thought through problems that seniors might face, that have precious retirement plans that we want protected as much as we can protect them. We want the building trades who have Taft-Hartley plans to feel that they can join this plan, but their hard-earned, their negotiated plan is protected. So it's been a wonderful process to receive that kind of input from citizens around the state. I remember somebody saying, "Well, your bill has changed so much over the years. Has it gotten weaker and weaker?" And so it's just the opposite. It's really gotten better. And we have something, I think, very exciting that could be a model for other states with rural populations and have high poverty levels.
So let us look forward now to 2015 and make the assumption that this passes. The earliest it could actually go into effect would be 2017 under a waiver from Obamacare. Can you tell us in a minute or two how the health security plan for New Mexico would relate to Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act if it were to become law? And then we'll go into more detail on aspects of Obamacare and the health security plan for New Mexico after a break.
Well, Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, is a blessing in many ways because it's the first time that all of us in the United States have to come to grips with how do we cover everybody. And that's a really very, very positive. And because the private insurance system, it has become unaffordable for so many people, there are subsidies and an expansion of Medicaid to, for instance, single people who may have been low income but could never have gotten it before. So all of this is very, very positive. We, in our campaign, we're very excited to see the waiver for state innovation provision that was included in the Affordable Care Act. There is everybody's heard about these exchanges and the exchange models and some of it, and it really did come from Massachusetts, despite what Romney says in denying it. But it is one approach to covering the uninsured is an exchange. And the idea is maybe states can come up with other approaches to covering the uninsured and also controlling costs, and that they should be allowed to do so. And so that's the purpose of the waiver for state innovation. You don't get a waiver doing nothing. You cannot. You have to actually comply with four criteria in the waiver for state innovation and cover, you know, figure out a way to cover people. And so that's where the Health Security Plan and the Health Security Act fits in. You cannot get the waiver till 2017. We were concerned about that. We felt people should get waivers right away if they so chose. But that's, you know, that for a lot of reasons, that date has remained. And so this has made us rethink some of the past provisions of the Health Security Act and how it will comply with that section of the Affordable Care Act, but it is fully in compliance with the national law.
When we return from a brief break, we'll talk a little bit more about the Obamacare Health Insurance Exchange Marketplace, what's happening now, what New Mexicans should know about that, and then we'll talk about some issues in the costs of health care for Americans. Stay with us.
So, Charlie Alfaro, Gila Mimbres Community Radio is a fully independent voice and choice responsible only to those people who make it possible with their contributions.
Oh, I think that's sort of the basis of democracy, is local empowerment to do the things we think are important and have people participate in that process. That's a critical piece of individual and societal freedom.
Welcome back to Civil Discourse, a public affairs production of Gila Mimbres Community Radio. I'm Jamie Newton. If you're just joining us, my guest is Mary Feldblum. She's the executive director of the Health Security Plan for New Mexicans campaign. We're talking about how to provide comprehensive, affordable health care for all New Mexicans, and we have just been discussing the legislation that is proposed to implement the Health Security Plan for New Mexicans, the Health Security Act, and how it will relate to the Affordable Care Act, which allows a state to benefit from a waiver in 2017 at the earliest. This plan would give New Mexico its own state insurance plan. And we'd now like to talk about what's happening right now, October of 2013. On the first day of this month, the state health insurance exchanges mandated by the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare launched on the same day that the government was shut down. There is significant confusion about this. Can you talk about that, Mary Feldblum, and tell us what New Mexicans should know about what's happening with the Affordable Care Act now and how people can get useful, practical information to guide their own decisions?
Well, there's actually a lot of provisions of the Affordable Care Act that have been in effect for a couple of years. For instance, children under 26 can be covered by their families. Seniors should notice that they're getting preventive care. Clinics have received extra dollars. There's a whole slew of provisions. But what we're all hearing about right now is this now passed October 1st deadline, when every state is supposed to begin to offer insurance to the uninsured through what's called an insurance exchange. And if you think of Amazon or some of these online purchasing companies, that's what an exchange is. It's online. It will offer the uninsured hopefully apples to apples comparison of various insurance plans, and there will be subsidies to help people up to 400% of poverty to actually purchase the premium. And so the exchanges are supposed to be up and running by January 1st of 2014. You can't begin to get coverage until that date. But enrollment has started October 1st. It's a very, very complicated information technology computer system that's being set up. It's never been done before. What has to happen when you go online is essentially your income is inputted. It has to be verified by the IRS. The IRS doesn't know what your claims history is, by the way. And so it's the IRS, and then you have to it has to be determined whether you are Medicaid eligible or whether you are eligible to purchase through the exchange, which is not for those eligible for Medicaid. And so if you are eligible for Medicaid, it shifts you into the Medicaid enrollment process. If you're eligible for the exchange, then it tells you through the income data that you've submitted, that tells you what type of subsidy you may receive so that you can subtract that from the premium and know what the costs will be. And you will have some options for plans. As some of you have probably heard of the bronze and the silver, and essentially the services will be the same. By that I mean there's essential benefit services that the states have been allowed to determine, and that will be the same whether you purchase a bronze or a silver or a platinum or a gold. What will be different is your out-of-pocket costs. The premium will be lower on the bronze, but your out-of-pocket costs are going to be higher. And so that's what people have to choose. It's a risk-based concept, essentially. You're betting on yourself and how much you might have to pay during the coming year. And you'll be able to change. There'll be new enrollment at the end of following year, so you can change insurance companies. The theory of an exchange, which actually comes from a very conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation, it is a Republican concept of, you know, consumers need to be informed about their health plans and need to be responsible for how much they're going to pay in these health plans. And so you offer them on a kind of marketplace, a internet marketplace, and let them decide. And that should attract lots of insurance companies who will then compete for these consumers, and hopefully premiums will be lowered. That is the theory behind it. Massachusetts certainly has not shown that to be the case, but there is, you know, some expectations that maybe there will be some competition, particularly in states that have larger insurance company participation. We're not one of those states. We have very few insurance companies that are in our marketplace. When you think about it, it's Molina, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Loveless, Presbyterian, United Healthcare. Those are the big players in our state. So that's essentially what the exchange will offer. And what has happened and what has been a lot of publicity are the computer glitches. And these are not glitches. They're actually really systemic problems that will have to be fixed, you know, and will be fixed. There's no question that they will be fixed. And maybe some deadlines will be postponed, taking into consideration that people can't sign up. So many people are confused. I mean, if you're a Medicare patient, you don't have to go through the exchange. If your employer covers you, you don't have to go through the exchange. It is really for the uninsured and the self-employed, and also for small employers right away that have less than 50 employees. So while the individual gets a subsidy, the small employer who decides to participate in the business exchange will actually get up to a 50% tax credit for the premiums that they pay for their employees.
So you've said that this is primarily for people who are uninsured or perhaps underinsured. New Mexico has the second highest proportion of uninsured citizens of all the states in the union after Texas. Let us suppose that a relatively low-income person who does not have her own computer and is uninsured discovers that this is entirely internet-mediated, right? There's no building in Silver City that is the health insurance exchange that opened on October 1st. So she goes to the library, waits in line, gets to use a computer with internet access. What's next?
Well, first of all, I think there are a lot of people in New Mexico that don't have computers. It's a very high percentage.
Yes.
Secondly, even if you have a computer, you may not be you may not be able to work your way through through some of the complexities. I know I have senior friends or seniors who have difficulty with Medicare Part D, which is the pharmaceutical drug plan that online you can go online through Medicare and figure out what of the 26, 27 drug plans that are offered, you know, which one may be the best for you. And it's very confusing even for people who consider themselves academics or very sophisticated in the computer world. So understanding that this is a problem, the Affordable Care Act has provided for navigators and trainings of people for people to help people go through this maze of choices.
And navigators are people. They're not
people.
Apps.
They're not apps. Yes. They're people. And in this city, I understand there's going to be some kind of event in which people will actually learn about this and can actually meet with people to figure out what may be best for them. So this involves not only is enormous training for the navigators and the guides, that's happening. There are groups that are taking responsibility for that. I think the Green Chamber is actually going to be involved, and there are others that are going to be involved. And so the hope is that this personal touch, not necessarily an insurance agent, although you can go to your insurance agent, hopefully will know how to help you since they know you, but that these navigators can help you work through what seems to be the best choice for you. But ultimately, the consumer, you, the uninsured person, are going to have to figure out your risk and what you're willing to pay, and learn what, since the essential benefits are the same, you don't have to worry about the services. What you're going to have to look at are what the co-pays are, what are your extra out-of-pocket costs, and your network. You will want to know specifically, if I like this plan and this insurance carrier, who, you know, is my doctor in it? Is my hospital in it? And so those are questions, and you have the right to see that information online to help you make an informed decision.
So there's a lot to investigate, a lot to sort out, a lot for a new participant to learn. And let me ask a question that I hope you can answer in the 2 or 3 minutes before we go to a break. Not a simple one. Although you hear people say pretty often, in the United States we have the best health care in the world, it is stunningly expensive. Just a few months ago in Time magazine, Stephen Brill had an article very carefully researched which described the charge master that's used by hospitals to put together bills that often you would think could provoke a heart attack when people receive them, where they see that effectively a little Band-Aid has been billed at more than $100, a Tylenol more than $100, thousands of dollars after they go into an emergency room for something they wondered if they needed help on. Why is healthcare so expensive in the United States? Is there a concise answer to that?
Well, it's a very complicated issue, because when people talk about healthcare costs, and Stephen Brill is focusing on providers and not insurance premiums and how they are reflected in the rising healthcare costs. And actually, there is no question that hospitals bill you enormous amounts of money for the Kleenex that you get or the aspirin, and there is something very wrong with the system there, and that providers, doctors, are faced with a myriad of charges that they have to deal with depending on the insurance company. But what's missing in that analysis, aside from some of the egregious ways of determining actual health costs in the United States, is the complexity of our private insurance system. And that is that your local hospital, your doctors that still maintain fee-for-service and aren't working for the hospital or for Hidalgo Medical Services, have to deal with a complex array of private insurance policies. So you go into the office, you have you're lucky enough to have an insurance policy. Well, your services are covered differently from your neighbors. There's different copay, deductible obligations. Then the doctor's office has to submit that claim. And there's all a real complexity of codes that have to be dealt with. And if one code is wrong, then they don't get paid. And it's an enormous delay system with the claims processing. Hospitals spend an inordinate amount of money, as do providers, on overhead that deals with just the complexity of the system that doesn't go to healthcare. So that's what's missing in I think, some of the cost analysis picture. The other piece of it is that if you look at graphs that show provider costs increases, and I'm talking about hospitals and doctors, over the years using the medical price index, let's say, and then you look at premiums, insurance premiums are going up far higher than the medical costs. And that's the profit that's made by the insurance company. And that is not discussed a lot when people look at the cost analysis picture. So we have to look at all pieces, and in order to, and we'll see that the Affordable Care Act actually is focusing a lot on the provider side. They're trying to deal with the insurance side by saying, oh, you have to, you know, if your premium, a certain percentage has to go to healthcare, 85% or 80%. But there are lots of ways for the insurance industry to change what is administrative and what is healthcare, and to fit into those formulas. And it doesn't stop them from raising the premium. They can still raise the premium.
When we return from a break, we'll find out how the health security plan for New Mexicans would create a system to address those issues and hold down costs.
Thanks for listening to Gila Members Community Radio. We're nonprofit, non-commercial, listener-supported, volunteer-operated, and locally focused. We appreciate your interest and value your support. Become a member and put the you in community.
Welcome back to Civil Discourse, a public affairs production of Gila Mimbres Community Radio. I'm Jamie Newton. My guest is Mary Feldblum, Executive Director of the Health Security Plan for New Mexicans campaign, and we're talking about comprehensive, affordable health care for all New Mexicans. We've also been discussing the Affordable Care Act and how the health security plan will relate to that. I want to read a brief excerpt from the current October 14th, 2013 Time magazine. The Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, was designed to provide coverage for two-thirds of the nearly 48 million U.S. residents without health insurance. And then it goes on to talk about opposition to that. 27 states declined to set up exchanges or cooperate with the federal government to run them, and many are finding other ways to prevent the law from working as planned. The day before a federally operated exchange launched in Missouri, the state's lieutenant governor urged residents not to sign up. In Florida, a directive from Governor Rick Scott blocks navigators, consumer assistance workers paid through the ACA, from working with county health departments. Georgia's insurance commissioner has said his department will do, quote, everything in our power to be an obstructionist, unquote. When the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, was written, a cornerstone of the measure was a massive expansion of Medicaid, the government-run insurance program for the poor. But the Supreme Court ruled in 2012 that states aren't required to play along, and 26 have declined to do so, rejecting federal money to expand their Medicaid rolls. There's more. Efforts to insure all Americans with governmental support and coordination have their critics. There is a telling effect of that. What are the critics, individuals, organizations, of the health security plan for New Mexicans? What are their objections? What do they want? And how does the campaign that you direct address those?
Well, I think you have to separate out the critics of the Affordable Care Act and the Health Security Act, which is very New Mexican. And in the Affordable Care Act, you do have essentially very strong Republican anti-Obamacare rhetoric, I'm afraid, because there's a lot of misinformation about the Affordable Care Act that is unfortunate. People should really figure out what the truth is before you make a judgment.
Mark Twain is reputed to have said, it isn't so much what we don't know that hurts us, it's what we do know that isn't true.
Yes, that's a very wise statement by that fabulous author. In terms of the Health Security Act, in which we would set up our own health plan that shifts the role of private insurance, well, I think everybody can imagine how the private insurance system feels about that. Whereas under the Affordable Care Act, the private insurance system is maintained. And so under the exchange, you're allowed to purchase private insurance. And if you can't afford it, you're actually getting a tax subsidy, a federal subsidy to help purchase, so that insurance companies who have refused to insure millions and millions of New Mexicans at affordable rates will now gain an enormous amount of money. They will stand to make billions of dollars off this plan. So it's interesting that while they first didn't support the Affordable Care Act, when the Health Security Act was heard this past session, the insurance industry, loud and clear, was saying, let's let the Affordable Care Act have its, you know, work out. Let's have these exchanges, because they stand to make money off of them. So they're a very large opponent. We are a nonpartisan campaign. We have a substantial number of Republicans, independents, all kinds of people that support the idea of New Mexico setting up its own health plan. So we're not confronted with the antipathy that has been created by the Republican Party towards Obamacare specifically. There are Republicans that do not like this plan, but we're just, when the city of Roswell, actually four Republicans joined two Democrats to support this, and the cities and counties, that it has been bipartisan at a local level. It's just wonderful, you know, to hear people talk regardless of their party and listen to what this plan is and how it would function. And give us any concerns that they have, see if we can, how we can address them. So, but with the Affordable Care Act, it's been emotional. It's been very different. And what is sad is when you hear the Republican Party threatening the National Football Association, you know, or the, if they want to participate in educating consumers about the exchanges and help people understand what's going on. And there have been unfortunate threats that way of to sabotage education. And education is critical for people. And this is an incredible first step for the United States. Even though it's a private insurance model, it is going to allow so many people to get insurance who've never had it before. And with the Medicaid expansion, those states that are going to expand their Medicaid, they're going to do so much better than those states like Texas and others that are refusing 100% government dollars to cover people who are vulnerable. And that is unfortunate. And it is in our state, our Republican governor has accepted to expand Medicaid. So this is it's not all Republicans feel this way. And she has also said the Affordable Care Act is the law of the land, and we will comply with setting up exchanges. And so in New Mexico, at first they wanted just completely state-run exchange for the individual market and the business, small business market. But now the small business market exchange is going to be run by the state, and the individual market will be run through the federal government, just as with those states that have refused to comply with setting up an exchange. There is a federal exchange. And so that's the decision, and they're hoping that by 2015, the individual market will come back to the state so that it will be totally state-run. So we're in a very different situation, where I've heard us Republican state senators say we need to do this right, which is a very different tone than you hear in other states. And I think it's very interesting. But our plan, while it's not the law of the land yet, is, we think, a much better approach. And it does have a lot of bipartisan citizen support. And we think that it will address the issues of cost and universal coverage so that everybody in New Mexico will have coverage. If you're military, you retain your own, but you still have coverage. And if you're an Intel self-insured company and decide you can voluntarily join the plan, if you decide not to, your employees still have coverage. So everybody has coverage under the health security plan. And it is also will deal with rising health care costs.
You have built a very broad-based coalition of support, even going beyond those organizations that are listed. And you're optimistic about getting this act approved by the legislature in 2015. What is the evidence that you've used to persuade people who might have been critics, organizations that might have been opponents, that in fact this plan will provide affordable care, will be efficient, will meet its objectives?
Well, there have been two separate studies done in New Mexico, one in 1994 and the other one in more recently in 2007. Both these studies have shown that if you pool all New Mexicans or most New Mexicans into one old-fashioned insurance plan, we're young, old, healthy, not so healthy, you're all in it together, you are dramatically going to reduce rising health care costs. And I don't mean that health costs go down. I mean that their rate of increase will be much less than under the current system or even under other types of systems that they compared to. And it billions of dollars literally would be saved. Why? One reason is because you no longer have the private insurance system of complexity that I spoke about earlier that affects doctors and it affects hospitals. The overhead that is spent dealing with the complexity of the private insurance system is enormous. You no longer have the profits that go to the private insurance system to pay CEO salaries, to do all the complexities of advertising, actuarial analysis, claims rejection, all this kind of stuff that they spend money on, that won't have to be spent under the health security plan. And in addition, our premiums, instead of going to a private insurance plan, will now go to our plan, which is like a co-op, and will earn interest that will actually help underserved areas of the state build the type of health infrastructure that they need, but they can't afford because their residents are very low income.
Mary Fellblum, you've been directing the Health Security Plan for New Mexicans campaign for quite a few years. You've been working toward comprehensive, affordable health care for all citizens for a long time. This is a very arduous struggle. It involves weathering conflict, finding your way through policy alternatives. This is really quite an endeavor. What keeps you going? What will keep you going until success that's brightly just around the corner a few years from now, you hope?
Well, I think what keeps me going is the growth that we've had in support. Our problem is spreading the word, making people aware that there is this alternative that is homegrown, homespun, and that would be really good for us in New Mexico. And that when people hear about it, whether it's the Roswell City Council or a CEO of a hospital, or ordinary citizens that say, that's a fabulous idea, that is very heartening. I am a social scientist. I look at social movements. We're struggling against a very dominant paradigm of the private insurance system. They are very powerful. And I think if you look at social movements throughout our history, minimum wage, you know, child labor, civil rights, you see these things don't just happen. There is a growth that's really, really critical to make that movement successful. The civil rights movement just didn't happen, you know, in 1 year or even a decade. And so having a long-term perspective and also having something that we really is homegrown and wonderful and really is the best thing for our state keeps me going. and I will keep, like the Energizer Bunny, I will keep going and going and going until everyone in the state has what I think is a really good plan for health coverage, and it's health security. So no one will go bankrupt over health care or be denied health care.
We will post a link on our website for Gila Mimbres Community Radio to your website for the Health Security Plan for New Mexicans campaign. In our last minute or so, can you tell our listeners how they can become involved if they want to contribute to bringing this rosy future, this better future, into reality?
Well, in your area, people belong to organizations. It could be the Green Chamber, the Chamber of Commerce, LULAC, a union, and getting your organizations active and excited about this, spreading the word, and talking to your state legislators. You have two state representatives and one state senator, and letting them know that while the Affordable Care Act is a first step, this is a better step. This is something that is really ours and is certainly in compliance with the Affordable Care Act, and will get all the federal dollars that would go to an exchange, the subsidies, the tax credits, the Medicaid expansion, once you get the waiver for innovation. People can also get more information on our website, www.nmhealthsecurity.org. And we come down here. I'm here in Silver City right now talking to different groups where we have plan and we'll travel. And we want you to hear this. Ask your hard questions. That's really important to us, because maybe there's something that we need to change in the current version of the bill that you will lead us into thinking about to make this even better. Something that we will be so proud of in New Mexico, and that could serve as a model for other states that are rural and low income and have large expanses where you have to get to hospitals. You're not in Vermont where it's just 15 minutes away. So I think we have a chance of creating something that's really positive and unique for our state, and we can be on the map.
You've been listening to Civil Discourse on Gila Mimbres Community Radio. Our topic has been the Health Security Plan for New Mexicans campaign, comprehensive, affordable health care for all New Mexicans. Thank you to our guest, Mary Feldblum, executive director of that campaign, for being with us.
And thank you, Jamie, for this wonderful interview, and I hope it's been useful to your listeners.
This is Gila Mimbres Community Radio, and you've been listening to Civil Discourse with your host, Jamie Newton. Civil Discourse is a program of conversations and discussions on significant issues facing our community and our society. Civil Discourse will be presented from time to time, and hopefully on a regular schedule later this year. This is GMCR, a voice and a choice for Southwest New Mexico.